Hello and welcome to episode 31 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenu.
And to kickstart season 3, we have with us the one and only mom boss of 3 from YouTube. Tina started her YouTube channel a year ago with vlogs that give her audience a glimpse into her day-to-day life as a mother of 3 children, all under the age of 6.
In this episode, she talks about her life before marriage and kids, life as a second-generation Desi in Canada, and how she manages to juggle such a hectic schedule whilst building her YouTube empire. So without further ado, let's jump right into the show. Welcome to the show, Tina. We're so happy to have you kick off season 3 with us. None of our season premieres have been kicked off with a bang like this.
Oh, thank you.
We've only had 2 seasons so far, Meenu. So our pilot episode was also very cringy. I really hope Tina doesn't go back and listen to it. So
you guys keep saying that. I'm going to go back and listen. Oh, no.
But Tina, we feel that there's this whole chapter of your life that no one really talks about anymore. And that's your chapter pre-Harpreet, before your husband came into the picture. So what was your life like before you became the mom boss of 3?
Oh, very interesting question. So my life is, it's very different than it is now, for sure. So I am actually a healthcare professional. So I ran my own practice. And Oh, actually, that's even while I was dating Harpreet. See, I can't even remember that far back. So yeah, I was living with my parents before I married Harpreet, like most traditional Indian people do.
Yeah.
And I studied. I was very social, spent a lot of time with my friends, hit the club scene, you know, did all that.
And what did you study? You said you were a healthcare professional.
Yeah, so I'm an occupational therapist. And so I ran my own practice. And I started running that practice, I believe, back in 2009, maybe. That was when I was already married. However, I was just finishing my education. I finished my master's before I got married. So I finished my master's back in 2007.
Ooh, we always discuss on our podcast how Desi parents tend to kind of force their kids into, you know, either engineering or medicine. And yours was pretty much the generation that started that trend. And you have Desi parents. So when you say you had your practice and everything, do you think that influenced your choice?
My choice in what profession I went into?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think my parents did have high expectations. They wanted us to, you know, do something with our lives. That being said, they were never really forceful and go into medicine or go into, you know, engineering or anything like that. But it's funny because I'm married.
And here I am sitting right here just listening to you.
Yeah, and here I am. I'm married to an engineer. So
me too.
Yeah, so, you know, they didn't force me to that. Actually, my mom wanted me to be a police officer, as funny as that is. Like she, I'm very tall. And so she felt like I was a waste of height, not doing something more physical. So they never really pushed me into those things. But education was certainly something that they really, really valued, and that it wasn't optional. Like you have to do at least an undergrad degree and then do what you want.
Mm-hmm. How tall are you actually?
Well, I'm almost 5'9". It's not that tall, but I mean like I was tall for my mom, I guess.
Did you ever play basketball, Tina?
No, I'm horrible at sports.
Oh. Now, I remember a sister tag you did on YouTube where you called your sister short because she was 5'4".
Yeah, or yeah, she's. I think she's even taller than 5'4".
But the thing is, I'm only 4'11", so I don't even want to stand next to you.
Trust me, there's a lot. But you know what? You might feel small standing next to me, but I probably would feel more self-conscious standing next to you. Because I always feel like I'm so big and overpowering. And I like to be like dainty sometimes, so that doesn't help me.
So do you wear heels, Tina?
I don't, because I'm lazy and I find them hard to walk in. Okay. But I do like heels.
Okay. Yeah.
It was a requirement actually when I married my husband that I had to marry someone who was over 6 feet tall so I could wear any heels I wanted, and he's 6'3", so it worked out.
It's quite lucky.
Yeah.
So Tina, just speaking of yours being the generation that may have started the whole engineering and medicine trend, yours was also the generation that first got introduced to social media. Mm-hmm. You didn't have the exposure that your kids may have now or the exposure that we currently have. But your generation was kind of in the middle in the sense that our parents basically had no access to the internet. Mm-hmm. And now we probably have too much access to the internet. So you were kind of in the middle. And what was it like back then? Like, were you on MySpace or on MSN chat? Like, how did you go about all this?
Yeah, so I was on MSN chat back in the day. I think I remember first going on the internet, like for the first time. I remember it being like one of those free trials for 30 hours on whatever the medium that was. I forgot what it is now. And I remember going on and thinking, I have no idea what this is. There's access to everything. You can talk to so many people. It's endless how you can connect with people. So I remember thinking that for sure. I was on MSN chat. It took me a long time to join. I joined Facebook like in 2009. Like I joined Facebook early on. I did the basic stuff, but I wasn't so big on too much social media, if I'm really honest. But I do remember the first time. Also realizing I don't have to go to the library to get books. That was also another big thing.
Oh, yeah. 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 That was the thing for me as well, because I was in India and my parents had this huge phobia of the internet because someone's daughter somewhere ran off with a guy she met on the internet. So my parents were like, oh, no, you're not going to do this to our daughter. And I actually had to go to the library to get books in order to do my assignments till the 10th grade, which is quite sad.
Yeah.
we were only allowed to use the internet after 6 p.m. because it was a cheaper rate per hour.
Yeah.
That's so Indian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just good sense. I'm a mother, so I think that's just good sense.
Fair enough.
But were you ever on MySpace or Orkut? Do you remember those?
MySpace. I wasn't on it. No. I think that I was a little bit slow to join some of the other social media stuff. Like I would do chat rooms and stuff like that, talk to my friends, but I wasn't really so big on joining sort of the other platforms. That being said, I met my husband on DesiPlanet.com, which doesn't exist anymore.
It's a shame. It's a shame it doesn't exist, or you guys could have been the success story PR campaign for them.
I know. Actually, I know a lot of people who got married who met on that site, actually. Yeah.
But I'm curious, if you were, you know, were you both just hanging out on Desi Planet looking for someone to date, or did your parents find Harpreet for you on the website and, you know, sort of arrange the whole thing?
No, it's just it was sort of just a chat room kind of, and we just happened to meet each other. And yeah, one day we met and that was it. So we actually had like we realized after the fact we had some friends in common, but we had never met in person before that. He is from the west end of the city. I was from the east end of the city. So yeah, my parents had nothing to do with it.
Because even now we know that parents go to these matrimonial websites and create profiles for their kids. My in-laws actually do that because my husband is a younger brother and his older brother is not married yet. So
mine,
you know,
too.
How in an Indian family, that's a big deal that the older brother is not married. So my in-laws, I've seen them send profiles to my brother-in-law. So I was curious.
Oh, man.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a thing. And my husband is the youngest of five brothers. And the one just older than him is not married. And I think he's kind of getting the pressure now.
Yeah.
Mm. Tina, on Desi Outsiders, we've had a lot of discussions about how first-generation Desi parents, so for example, your parents who came from India and my parents who moved from India to Gibraltar in Europe as well. And our parents may feel that their kids might kind of go off track, you know, from our culture and from our upbringing. Mm-hmm. So parents who've moved from India to the UK or US or Canada, they might go a little bit overboard in terms of holding on to their culture or continuing to wear Desi clothes or refusing to speak any English because they're worried about these things. And I feel that sometimes some parents who've moved from India may overdo it more than parents who are actually in India. So do you think that back then when you were dating and considering marriage, your parents would have been okay had you picked maybe a non-Desi guy or a Canadian?
I think my parents are very liberal. I don't know how okay they would have been with it, but I think that eventually they would have been okay with it had I chosen someone outside of the culture. I know that they would have been okay with it eventually. I don't know if it would be their first choice. Because also at that time, I got married 9 years ago. And so at that time, still kind of interfaith and culture marriages were still sort of a new thing. I mean, they certainly were happening, but it was still kind of a new thing. And I don't know if they'd want to be, you know, those parents, the ones whose daughter married someone outside the culture or religion. But I know because my parents are more liberal, they eventually would have been okay with it. That being said, I happened to marry like a Sikh Amritdhari Punjabi. So they were very, you know.
Yeah, you hit the jackpot.
I hit the jackpot. Yeah. So they were thrilled, right? But again, my parents are more liberal and they were, I know they certainly would have been okay with it in time.
Did you ever have these conversations with your mom or your dad before you ever got married? And did it ever come up in conversation?
I don't remember having these conversations with them. I mean, they certainly knew when, you know, at the time that, okay, yeah, maybe I'm meeting some people or whatever. They certainly knew that. But I don't think we had a conversation as to who was from where. I don't know. I don't think my parents, like I said, they're very liberal. And I don't think they think they would have had any concerns. Like, I think they trusted my judgment at that point, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you were also the firstborn, so usually with most parents, be it Desi or otherwise, you know, whether it's about studying or dating, it's quite common to see them expect a lot from their firstborn children. They tend to go a little easy on the younger kids. You know, we know about the Red Room incident. Do you want to tell our listeners what happened there?
Yes, let me share that. So if you don't know, my sister is YouTube superstar Lily Singh. And so when we were younger, I really wanted to paint my bedroom red. We had just moved into this new home and my parents told me I couldn't. They're like, it's going to be so difficult to paint over. Let's pick this nice, you know, beige color, which actually is lovely. And I said, okay. And of course, lo and behold, like 6 months or a year later, my sister wanted to paint her room red and they got it done, painted it 3 coats, you know, they're like, here you go. So, you know, and you know, you're talking about parents being easier on a younger sibling. I definitely think that's true in my case. And I don't know if it's them being easier on my sister. It was more, I'd already paved the way and let them know that everything was going to be okay. And so they were a little bit more accepting and a little bit more relaxed about the whole thing, I think.
Maybe if she brings a non-Desi home, they would probably not think too much about it at this stage because you already have, you know, you've been the perfect daughter, married the right person.
Oh, I don't know about the perfect daughter, but I think I followed a little bit of a traditional path. And so I think they're fine with it. And my sister lives a very like untraditional life. So I don't think it would be too much of an issue. I think they're more worried about, they're kind of at that phase now where they've been in Canada a really long time. My dad has been here since he was 17 years old. And so, you know, he's in his 60s now. So they really just want good people and want to make sure their daughters are, you know, with the right people and not, you know, worrying too much about what other people think about that situation.
Speaking of your sister, Tina, we know that your sister took up psychology herself, right? Because she does mention in a few of her videos that she was following your footsteps. Yeah. As she was going through her degree. And I think that's probably the only reason she ever gives for picking her college degree, because she says, you know, my sister did it, so why shouldn't I? And so she's 6 years your junior.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she must have grown up looking up to you. But now it seems that you're at the precipice of turning YouTube into your career the way your sister did. And do you think the roles may have reversed slightly? Do you look at her for guidance and advice?
Oh, yes, 100%. So I always say to her, the tables have turned. People used to refer to her as Tina's sister, and now I'm just a woman's sister, right? So that, like, people don't even know my name. So that's, no, it's it definitely...
It's okay, we do.
Oh, thank you. No, the roles have definitely reversed in that respect. I mean, I have a... You know, I ran a practice I'm very proud of. I actually work in a career that I actually really enjoy. And so me initially starting YouTube as, you know, kind of a way to, you know, save a memory for my family and to try something different while I was, you know, working very little is certainly a whole different life. And she has incredible experience in that area. She's been doing it for like 6 years. And so she is someone I definitely go to for advice. I look up to her, the audience that she has, you know, and people who watch her, they love her. Like, they love her, love her. So, I mean, it's certainly, she's certainly an icon. Like, I look up to her for sure. And, you know, I couldn't be more proud. Sometimes people will say to me, you know, how do you feel knowing that everyone now refers to you as Superwoman's sister? And honestly, I'm so proud because she is 6 years my junior. I've always thought of her as like my firstborn child, and so I don't feel stressed about that at all. I love the fact that people love her. And yes, I certainly looked to her for guidance for all things YouTube and other areas of my life too.
Oh my God, I just realized that you're 6 years older than Lily and you joined YouTube 6 years after she did. So the whole role reversal thing, you know, my mind is blown.
Right? Yeah, it might be 6 or 7 years. She may have been doing it for 7 years, I'm not sure. But I still remember the day we were sitting in a restaurant and she said to me, you know, I'm starting this thing called YouTube. And I was like, what the hell is YouTube? So like this was back in the day, I didn't know. And I think my husband was probably one of her first subscribers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
No, but I remember seeing Tina in the first video that's there on YouTube by Lily Singh, which is how to tie a turban, I think. Mm-hmm. And I remember you with your little camera phone, you were taking the video. Yes. So you were there from, you've seen her entire journey.
Pretty much, yeah. She's had videos before that, I think. I don't know if they're still up, but she had a few before that. But yeah, she did that in my house. So I recorded it for her.
And when you started your channel, it was called the Neurotic Mom Diaries before.
Yes.
And why did you change that to Mom Boss of Three?
It was really a practical reason. So when I have any names on social media, for example, Instagram, I can't have a name that long. And so there became some confusion around, you know, what my name is on Instagram versus what it is on YouTube. And so I used to have it as Mom Boss of Three, but it's unfortunate because I really love the name and I used to write a blog by that name. It's no longer public, but I used to write a blog by that name just for myself and some friends from when I first became a mother. And so that's where that name came from. And actually, I still really love that name.
It is. Yeah, that's why I remember the very first time when did you start YouTube, Tina? It was a couple of, maybe last year?
It was January 2016.
Yeah, so last year. I remember watching your first video.
Yeah, me too.
And it said Neurotic Mom Diaries. And I was like, oh, it's a really cool name.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, I'm sure I won't be changing it back at this point, but I always laugh at this Mom Boss of Three because someone said to me, like, what if you have another kid? I'm like, I don't plan to have another kid, but what if I have another kid? It's like Mom Boss of Three plus one.
Plus one.
Yeah.
It's all sorted already.
But yeah, maybe exactly. You should start blogging again and you can make your blog the Neurotic Mom Diaries and keep it that way.
I know. But you know what? It would all have to be consistent. It's all about branding, right?
Yeah.
That's true. So one thing that really stood out to us, Tina, was that while we were getting in touch with you regarding this interview, is your work ethic and how professional you were in communicating with us. So first of all, we weren't sure if you'd agree to be on our show, because obviously we understand how busy you are. So we were very pleasantly surprised when you responded to us quite within a few hours. And every time we got in touch with you, you'd reply quite promptly. And there was one time that you didn't, Tina, and we got a bit scared. So we checked your Insta stories to see what you were up to.
Yeah, we stalked you. I went to your Instagram and I saw that you put up a post saying, hey, moms out there, you could have a bad day, but you know, you're still doing this right. And I was like, maybe Tina had a bad day. That's why she's not replying.
Yeah. No, I think actually the one day I know the date, the time it took me a day. And I think it was the day that my son pulled his elbow. And so I had to take him to Kids Hospital to adjust.
Had to go to hospital.
Yeah, so it was probably that day, or it was probably a day where I was saying, listen, I'm ignoring social media for a day. So no, I'm pretty prompt to get back to people. And in terms of being on your podcast, when people ask me to collaborate with them, there's very rare times I say no, because I feel like I've been, you know, so lucky that my sister happens to be so famous and she helps me out with everything. And if there's anything I've learned from her, it's to be kind and help other people. And when I listened to your podcast, I thought, you know, I did listen to it first and I thought to myself, you know what, these girls sound great and I would love to be on their podcast. So I very rarely actually say no to collaborations because I think that they're good and we're a community about growing and sharing each other's talents and creative ventures. And so I think collaboration is a great thing.
And here you are, Tina, at 7:30 local time in Canada doing this podcast with us. And
on a Sunday, maybe that too.
Yeah,
and probably your children are probably asleep right now. No. And I remember, they're awake.
Yeah, they're awake, yeah.
Okay. So Tina, there was one Instagram story that you'd put up and I saw that I think you had lost a chunk of your editing work or some of your footage. It was about 2 a.m., I think. And obviously as a mother, you know, you go to bed at 2 a.m. There's no chance you can say, okay, I'll just have a lie-in tomorrow.
Yeah.
So on top of everything else, you're into fitness and working out. I know you go to boot camp as well. So how do you manage to stay so true to this incredible work ethic that you have? And you make it a point to actually get everything done. despite all the chaos happening in your house every day.
Yeah, I don't know. People ask me that all the time. And I've got to say, there's no such thing as balance, but that I focus on priorities. So I feel like I've made a commitment now. Like in January this year, I changed sort of my vlogging style. And so instead of doing a vlog every day or 1 week's worth of vlog, you know, I've tried out different formats, that I was doing a vlog Monday and Wednesday, and I would try for a video every Friday as much as I could. And I think that I've committed to that. And so if I've committed to it, I should be making every effort, like move, you know, heaven and earth to try to do that. And, you know, it's not easy all the time, like that day when I lost my footage. But to me, it's important. I feel like I connect with the community of people who watch my vlogs. And I mean, I'm sure that they don't care if I release a vlog at 9 a.m. versus 12 p.m. I'm sure they don't care about that. But for me, it's like a job, and I've committed to do it, and I should do it before I do anything else.
Yeah, that's actually, you know, Ankita and I have also had some problems with, not with footage, but with audio. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've said, oh, if we don't release tomorrow, we release on Friday. But we also have the, you know, this mentality that we have to show up.
Yes.
Whether people are watching or not, we just want to make sure that we show up and stay true to our commitment. Because if you slip once, then you start slipping more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And it just becomes snowball.
Yeah, you can't let yourself do that, because chances are no one else is going to know. But this is your commitment to yourself. And that's one area where you need to be true to yourself. Also, Tina, these days, everyone expects moms to do everything. Like, be fit, have careers, don't hire a nanny or a cleaning service, and be amazing mothers. If you remember that Instagram story where you were talking about hiring a cleaning service to clean. But back when you got married, the norm was quite different, you know. So many things weren't expected of, I'd say, human beings in general. So, you know, how were things back then? Like, what were the expectations that your parents or your sister or your husband and his family had from you back then?
Well, I think that when I first got married, so my husband and I, we bought a home right before we got married, and we moved into it once we got married. And shortly thereafter, my mother-in-law came to live with us as well. And so I'm very lucky that even though Harpreet is quite religious, his family is not that traditional, actually. And so there's very few expectations of me as to what I need to do. Like, I needed to maintain my own home because it's my own home. But other than that, there was no real, you know, get dressed up and sit and look pretty kind of thing that I see a lot of people have to deal with. I didn't have to deal with any of that. There wasn't very many expectations. I think if you're talking in terms of motherhood, I don't know, not too many of my friends were mothers at that time. So I can't really say what the expectations were for mothers at that time. I mean, now pretty much all my friends are mothers. And so our expectations now are certainly much higher of what we expect from ourselves. And I think that a lot of the time, the expectations we put on ourselves are, they're a little bit misled. Like, I expect myself to be a fit mom. I expect my house to be clean. I expect my kids to be well-behaved. I have 3 boys under 6. Like, that's never going to happen. So I think that I put too many expectations on myself. And as mothers, we all do, I think.
And it changes with time as you have more babies. Because I saw that video where you you describe what it was like to become a first-time mom. And by the time you had your third child, things were so much different.
Yeah.
So
did Harpreet really take a plastic bag?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think my bag, no, that's not really that accurate. I'm too much of a planner, but I didn't take as much stuff for sure. Like, I didn't take as much stuff. I was more relaxed about the whole thing. And it was, and actually went much easier the third time. The second time when I had Kabir, it was a little bit of a different situation. I was a little bit, he was a little bit early, and there was like a little bit of a complication, but by the time I got to the third one, I was much more relaxed and it was more easygoing. But yes, I think the expectations that you have for yourself kind of decrease a little bit as the more children you have and the more experience you have, because you realize that you're comparing yourself to the perfect mom that doesn't exist. And so that constant struggle, like, and you guys may have seen this on my Insta stories as well, that I'm turning 35 in August, and I've got this great expectation that I need to be super fit to turn 35. Otherwise, it can't happen. And so as someone who was very fit after my second son was born, I'm having a real struggle with this. And I think I'm comparing myself to people are different. And so in every aspect of my motherhood journey, I'm comparing myself to people who are just different. People are different, right?
Yeah, I was just along the same lines, Tina, that, you know, you have your own YouTube channel, right? And you do it so you can talk to other moms and connect with other moms in your community. And a lot of people go up to moms these days and congratulate them on doing a good job. You know, they say, oh, you have five kids. Well done. You know, yeah. You're still managing a full-time job and you're doing really well. But if we go back 30, 40 years ago, Tina, I mean, my grandmother had 8 children back then.
Yeah.
And having 3 kids was pretty normal. So back then, there weren't many expectations because you had, you know, women had their kids and they bathed them, they fed them, and that was their job. But why do you think there's a change in this expectation now? Do you think social media is a big problem, not a problem, but has played a big role in this?
Oh, for sure. So I think back when people had 8 or 9 kids or whatever it was, mm-hmm. and now having 3, like I'm considered a mom with a lot of kids, right? So like 2 is like, 1 is good. 2 is like, okay, good, you're done. And 3 is like, okay, you know, just calm down, right? So I think that once you hit 3 kids, people, you know, think that you have a lot. And so I think social media does play a big role in the expectations we have of ourselves. And so I think the expectations now of motherhood are much higher than they were back then. Not that moms didn't do a good job taking care of their kids then. They certainly did. But now the expectations of, you know, organic, everything gluten-free, and we need to, you know, like, you know, keep our house allergen free, and just all those expectations. And I think that's amplified by social media. So when I look at the people I follow on social media, there are a lot of moms I respect. And then there's also accounts that I follow where everything is Instagram perfect, so to speak. And I look at them and I say, why doesn't my kitchen look like that? Like, I'm currently in the process of trying to renovate my kitchen to be all white in the hopes that it's going to look like that. It's not, you know what I mean? But I've got this expectation, like, this mom has 4 kids and her place looks like this. Why doesn't my place look like this? I'm obviously doing something wrong, right? So I think it is amplified, and the expectations we have for ourselves are certainly amplified due to what we see on social media and what other people seem to expect. So people expect you to be a fit mom. If you're not, you're that mom who had kids and never got back into shape. And I think that a lot of people deal with that pressure. I know I do.
Yeah. Episode 22 of our podcast, Tina, was on motherhood, and you've listened to that one.
Yes.
It was released in time for Mother's Day here in the UK. And in that episode, I personally expressed a lot of fears that I had in terms of becoming a mother, which had mostly to do with making sure that I could raise and eventually release a good human being into this world. Because somewhere deep down, as a control freak, I feel that I really wouldn't have much control over all the influences in my child's life. And in that episode, I specifically shared one fear which made me a little uncomfortable. And it was a question of what I'd do when my child came up to me with an issue that conflicted with my values or my personal value system. The example I gave her was, what if my 25-year-old son came up to me with all the freedom that I've given him? He comes up to me and says that he could only feel sexually attracted to a 13-year-old girl. And how do I make sure that I'm there for him and at the same time I get him some help? So I think you're the perfect person to ask this question, because you have 3 little sons, and I hope I'm not traumatizing you with this.
No. I think that having an issue like that, I mean, something that conflicts with your value system, I think it's easy to react the wrong way. Like, I think I probably would. But I think looking at it as a future thing, I can say that I would want to highlight to my child that this is not something that we accept or that we act on. And that, again, I would want to get him that help, but still support him in knowing that, you know, that this is just something we need to figure out.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the same time, sort of letting them know that this is not acceptable based on the value system that I have. I mean, it's a very difficult question. Like, there's tons of scenarios like this that could come to you. And I think that just having your child feel supported first and foremost is the right thing to do. While at the same time, letting them know this goes against what you believe in.
Yeah.
And, you know, saying it's something that goes against what society believes in is kind of a slippery slope, because, you know, I don't know if I'd want to do that is what I'm saying. I wouldn't want to say, like, society doesn't accept this. I think I would want to say that I don't accept this, because there's a lot of things that people don't accept in society that they will eventually, right? Like, you talk about homosexuality and things like that, that were not accepted in society now are now much more mainstream, right? So I wouldn't want to put pressure on them that way, saying people aren't going to accept you. I think it would just be from my perspective to say, this is not something that we feel right about. And let's talk to someone about it. And let's talk to someone about it, as someone who knows how to help you sort through this time in your life.
Because you would still want them to come to you with any problem or any concerns that they have. You want to give them that freedom. But at the same time, you know, you have to make it clear to them, communicate to them that this is not okay to you.
Yeah. And I never want to be that parent where kids can't come and tell me something. Like, I really think, I feel strongly about that. I want to be the kind of mom that my kids could come up to me, even if it's something uncomfortable, that I'm open enough and they could come up to tell me something and feel okay about it. Like, it's not something, you know, obviously there'll be things they prefer to tell their friends and things like that. But I want them to be able to talk to me about things, you know, things that are challenging for them.
You studied psychology, right? So do you use your degree and your knowledge in this field as you raise your kids?
Not consciously. I'm sure I do somewhere in the back of my mind. Yeah. But no, I don't like consciously, you know, use, you know, what I learned in my in school for that kind of thing. No. But I think it's built in my mind. It's just part of who I am now.
Yeah.
It's just there.
And Tina, just speaking of your kids growing up, from your vlogs and videos, we've seen that you followed the path of religion to name your children. And you also just mentioned that Harpreet is quite religious. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that you're probably raising your children to follow these religious teachings. Mm-hmm. So with all the freedom of speech and the liberty we have these days, I mean, nowadays we have information that we are exposed to every single day, literally on our fingertips compared to 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So how would you feel or how would you react if one of your kids came up to you as a teenager or as an adult and said, look, you know, a religion might not just be for them?
So Harpreet and I have talked about this before. And, you know, because my boys keep their hair. And so we've talked about, like, what would happen if one day one of my boys said to me, you know, I don't want to keep my hair anymore. So that's like the biggest example we have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what we've sort of said is that if our kids are old enough to know what they're deciding, so I don't mean like 15. So if my kids were like, you know, where I think 15, there's still a lot of peer pressure that could affect them. Mm-hmm. If they were in like their 20s, their early 20s, and they said to me, you know, I don't want to keep my hair, I think that what we would do is we would speak to them about it, let them know why we felt it's important to keep their hair, you know, all their life, and, you know, it what it means, and then leave the decision to them. I feel at that point they're old enough to make that decision. They sort of know the consequences of what they're doing. And, you know, we would love them all the same, right? It's just, if they decide to make that decision, as long as it's an informed choice and they're old enough, I think that we're okay with it.
And do you, when you're with your kids every day, is religion a big part of your daily routine? I mean, I know that I'm Hindu, but we're Hindu Punjabi, so we're not Sikh, but we also go to the Gurdwara every Sunday when we can. And do you do that as a family as well? Often?
Not as much as we should. And the main reason being that I find it very hard to control 3 running kids in the Gurdwara. Yeah. So that's the challenge. And the older 2 are okay. But, you know, I feel like if I had taken them more regularly, maybe they would have gotten used to it more. But no, it's not something we do regularly. It's something we should definitely work on. It's not something we've done well with, no. And it's not, you know, we don't do like everyday prayers and things like that. The only thing that's part of our day is just, you know, doing their hair is just like a reminder of their religion. They know that they have a Judah, so they're man bun. They know they know that. And they don't know that much about religion. Like the oldest is only 5, the middle one is 3.5, and the youngest is just under 2. Mm-hmm. And so they don't know that much about religion yet, but it's coming, right? So they go to school with some other kids, some who keep their hair, some who don't. And, you know, those questions they're starting to come. So I think religion will start to play more of a role in our life now, going forward.
Do you teach them Punjabi as well at home?
So I speak Punjabi with them as much as I can. So my husband and I both do. My mother-in-law speaks with Punjabi with them as much as she can. She also speaks English, but she tries with them as much as she can. And that's what we tried to do. So before they started school, we tried to speak pretty much all Punjabi at home. But I mean, for Harpreet and I, both of our first language is English, so it's an effort to do that. Yeah. So it hasn't been easy at all times, but we've certainly tried as much as we can, and we try now because my middle son is in preschool, my oldest one is in kindergarten, and so they speak English all day, so they can at least understand us, and they know a lot of words in Punjabi. And I figure if we even do that, that's a good thing.
Plus, your kids are really lucky to be able to grow up with their grandmother in the home in the same home. So I think probably that also has a big influence on even the religious teachings or the language, everything. In general.
Yeah, because they see her and she's very heavily involved in the Gurdwara. She's there like twice a day.
Right.
And she's, so she's very heavily involved in that. So, I mean, if there was ever anything, you know, where they needed to know something and I didn't know, I have someone to go to be like, oh, they're asking about this, you know, like my reference.
Yeah,
because Tina, just earlier we mentioned, you know, how parents come from India and they move to the Europe or to US and they may just go overboard, you know, with teaching their kids about the Desi culture. And I know my mom definitely did that with me because she taught me how to read and and write Hindi.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually got to the point that when I used to go to India, people would just think I was born there, you know, because my Hindi was really good and I could read and write quite well. So I think that my parents kind of went overboard. But I think now, because you're the second generation, you have your parents over there to help you out. You know, our parents didn't have anyone to help them. So yeah. They had to go full force and everything.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that just going back to that, parents trying to teach their children so much with the culture, like going overboard, I think that's a fear. It's a fear that the culture is going to be lost. And so
yeah.
I understand that it's what they were brought up with, and they don't want us to lose that completely. And I think that it may have happened sort of for my generation. For some people, they have lost that, but I feel like it's coming back. Like, I feel more and more, like, my name is Tina, my sister's name is Lily, but I feel like now, like, with this generation coming forward, people are going back to using Punjabi names, and people are, you know, focusing on teaching Punjabi. And I think for our generation, it kind of, we may have lost that a little bit. I feel like we're kind of just getting our bearings. And I know over in the UK, there's, like, you know, there's multiple generations of, you know, British-born Indians, right? So it's a little bit different there. And I think here, I think it's certainly coming full circle that people want to kind of maintain this culture.
Mm-hmm.
So now, Tina, it's time to finally ask you something that we ask all of our guests. And we have a whole of four guests on the show before you. So what advice would you give someone who's thinking of becoming a first-time mom?
Becoming a first-time mom, the advice I would give them is just to go with the flow, to be honest, and that everything will come to you eventually. And that if you're not experiencing motherhood the way you think you should, it's only because you are reading too much into social media and other people's experiences. There are mothers that struggle from the very first day. There are mothers that are handed their firstborn child and feel like they don't love them or don't know them. And that is completely normal.
Yeah.
And it happens to people. And I think mothers feel alienated in that, why am I feeling this way? Why am I struggling? Why isn't my house clean? Why am I not doing all these things that all these moms seem to be able to do? And my advice in that whole area is, not everything is as perfect as it appears, and that every experience of motherhood is unique. And just because yours doesn't match that stereotypical mom experience, it doesn't mean your experience is wrong or there's something wrong with you. And I would also say, if you're struggling, to reach out for help.
And what advice would you give a mom who's going to have two kids under the age of two, two under two?
Two under two. So I had two under two. And so my advice would be that you just have to take it one day at a time, and that, you know, it can be really challenging at times, but the benefit of having your children grow up together close in age and be like best friends is incredible. And that the time will fly by so quickly. And so even if you're struggling, know that this too shall pass, and it will pass very quickly. And again, just take it one day at a time, and don't expect too much of other areas of your life during that time.
Now, Tina, this is just one last question I have for you. It just popped up into my head. Mm-hmm. It's not related to any advice, but when you started YouTube last year, and I'm sure you must have discussed this with your husband, right? Mm-hmm. And you said, you know, Harpreet, I would like to start this. And what was it? How did your husband support you, considering that you have three kids as well to take care of?
So my husband and I actually talked about it for a long time. I would say a month before we decided to, maybe more, before we decided to post our first vlog. And we had a lot of considerations. Like, we are a visible minority. We, you know, our children keep their hair, and so we're plastering their face all over the internet. And so you kind of open yourself up to a lot of potential hate. And that coming towards me or my husband is one thing, but coming towards your kids is something any mother cannot tolerate, right? So it's certainly something we talked about for like a month. And it was never that question of, can you handle it while taking care of the kids? Because I think my husband knows that if I'm determined to do something, that I'll do it and find a way. It was more of, is this a right decision for our family? So my husband knows my work ethic, and also YouTube is flexible. I knew that I didn't want to, you know, overextend myself. So I think when I first started vlogging, I was only doing a couple of vlogs a week, and they were done in advance. They weren't in real time. So they were taped like a couple weeks before. And so I was releasing them later. And eventually I decided to go to real time once I got the hang of it. And I was much faster with editing and things like that. But it was never a question of, can you handle it with the kids? It was, okay, we'll figure out a way. And my husband is very supportive. He finds time to, you know, take care of the kids when he gets home so I can get things done and do podcasts and things like that. So, you know, he's been very supportive of the whole thing.
Oh, Tina, this has been such a fun conversation. We know that a lot of young mothers listen to our podcast, and I'm sure that they must have found your journey relatable in many ways as well.
I hope so.
Well, actually, Tina, you know, Ankita is terrified to have kids. So I hope this conversation has given her
some. I overthink.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, overthinking is like my middle name. I overthink everything. I suffer from OCD. So this is, it's a real thing. Like, I overthink everything. And so I think becoming a parent, you know, the first time was, it just came naturally to me, as annoying as that sounds. It kind of came naturally to me the first time. The second and third time I struggled because I had another child to take care of, another children to take care of. And so I think that when you're thinking of everything outside of you that can affect your child and all the unknowns and, you know, being a control freak, which I certainly am. And so I can completely relate to you in that respect.
Yeah.
I think at a certain point you get that all you have control over is the being in front of you and the influence you're putting on them. And the rest is in the hands of God. And I think you kind of have to just, you know, and if you're religious
accept
at all,
it.
To just say, accept it, that this is, this is it, you know? And so, you know, we sort of believe our path is written for us. And so for me, I found a lot of peace in that, knowing that, okay, I've done what I can do. And so the rest is sort of up to the universe. And, you know, I think there's no love like being a mother. And I think that eventually, if you do decide to have children, you will be 100% fine. You know what you're doing. Like, it'll come to you.
That's really encouraging, actually.
Yeah.
Well, Tina, we've already planned it out. If Ankita does have kids, I'll just take care of them.
Exactly.
Because I'd love to have kids.
Yeah.
So, Tina, what would be the best way for our listeners to reach out to you?
Oh, if you want to chat with me for anything, you could reach me over on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook at MomBossOf3. And I also respond as much as I can to comments on my YouTube videos. And again, my channel name is MomBossOf3.
Okay, fantastic.
So we'll be leaving all of these social media links in our show notes, and we'll also link back to your YouTube channel. And we hope that more and more people watch your vlogs and follow your family's journey.
Oh, thank you.
So it's been great talking to you, Tina, and thank you again for coming on the show, and we're very delighted to have spoken to you today.
No, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
And thank you, dear listeners, for joining in on our conversation with Tina. Motherhood is a very subjective and even touchy topic, and there's obviously no one-size-fits-all. Every mother has her own journey and story to tell, and we're so happy that we got to talk to Tina, who shares her own unique story in her own unique way.
Once again, you can follow her YouTube channel, MomBossOf3, and reach out to her on Twitter and Instagram, at MomBossOf3. That's M-O-M, Boss of 3, 3 as the number. And while you're on Twitter, come check us out at Desi Outsiders. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at The Desi Outsiders, and drop us a mail with your thoughts.
Or your feedback. Or your questions. You can send us this email to mail@desioutsiders.com, and we'll see you next week with another fun conversation. Until then, I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And we are the Desi Outsiders.